turn our attention now to I call him the man with a plan. His name is Dr. Claude Anderson. And the reason why I call him the man with a plan, he's the only one who's got a plan that's specifically for Black America. Dr. Anderson, welcome back to WOL Radio.
Oh, thank you, Carl. I'm always delighted with the fact that you can remember me and invite me back.
Oh, I have to, because you've been saying for a long about this wealth gap between blacks and whites. And you said that during the last 8 years, the wealth gap widened a lot. Why so?
Well, it has never been closed. You know, it's pretty much where it was, I guess, in the end of the Civil War in 1860. Black folks still control almost the exact same amount of wealth that they did at the end of the Civil War. And or that not even the end of the Civil War, the beginning of the Civil War was about 0.5% or 1%. You only had about 287,000 black folk that were free at that time out of nearly 5 million. And those few blacks that successfully acquired about 0.5% of the nation's wealth. And it stayed pretty well consistent to that up until the present time. And that's why it's just humorous to me. People always talk about black folk and overcome. Black folk haven't got a snowball's chance in hell of being able to be successful and be competitive in society unless they change that wealth gap. The typical white person at the end of the Civil War had 3,500 times more wealth than the average black person. It's still there. We got about 3 or 4 white people in this country right now that got more wealth than all 44 million black folk put together. That's how bad it is. And as a matter of fact, to answer your question, when Reagan came into office, and I was with President Carter at that time, in the White House staffing, in his sub-cabinet, at that time when Reagan came in between 1982 and 1984, the numbers and the games that he played with our system and with the wealth building for whites, the wealth building for whites shot up from 82 to up to about 86 in that 4 year period, that the number of white millionaires in the country went up over 300%, and the number of white billionaires went up over 600%. Right now we got about somewhere between 450 to 500 billionaires, multi-billionaires in America. And out of 450 to 500 white billionaires, you got about 3 blacks. Black folk haven't got a snowball's chance. And as a matter of fact, it's the wealth that decides your equal opportunities in the society, not civil rights and social integration. It's what you own and control. Black folk from Connecticut to San Diego own and control 1% of anything of value. They haven't got a chance unless they learn how to redistribute this wealth. And that's what we should be focusing on. And the wealth that white folk have, Carl, most of it came from the maldistribution that came from the slavery in this country. Slavery maldistributed almost 100% of all this nation's wealth, power, resource, privileges, controls of all levels of governments, and businesses into the hands of the dominant white society. It hasn't changed. It's still fixed and locked. That's why when the wealth was initially tied to land. And see, black folk don't own any land in this society of any consequence. Even after slavery, by 1920, we had about almost 20 million acres of land. Now we're down to something like about 300,000. Blacks don't own anything. Every white person in this society got free land. That's what immigrants come in this country for. But we'll talk about all that, but the wealth is the thing that's key. And right now, black folk are not playing the wealth game. And the wealth that's in this country is locked into the white society. It's locked into their community, their culture, their institutions, their banks, their trust accounts, their inheritance, and it's passed on from one family to the next. And the land alone that is locked in there, that's passed on from one generation to the next, and that during the land wealth goes up, it doubles and triples every 20 years. Black folk got it locked and boxed into the basement.
So what you saying, we should all get involved in real estate?
Well, no, I'm just using real estate as an example, because now it's almost too late, Carl. See, after the Constitution set up the system in this country in 1789, the next thing they did was to pass the first immigration and naturalization law that says this is basically a white country. And anybody who wants to come to this country, about those who declare it as being white or who can pass as white or be classified or labeled as whites. And if they come to this country, they can get what we call the American dream. And I don't see any blacks in the political arena, any place in the university saying, what is the American dream? The American dream meant, and this country was advertising around the world saying anybody who's not black can come to this country and get what? Free land. And as they start off with George Washington. George Washington, the first president, so-called first president of the United States, he got 100,000 acres of free land starting it off. Thomas Jefferson got 100,000 acres of free land. Patrick Henry, who says, give me liberty, give me death, he got 65,000 acres of free land. Every white person come here, got a homestead and got 640 acres of free land. And land and homes and every slave they own that they could prove when they, if they were to head, call head rights, they got another 150 acres of free land. The railroads in this country, they had something like about 15 railroads lines that started up. The government gave them 23 to 24 million acres of free land. They gave them 6 miles of free land on each side of the darn railroads across the country, 6 miles on each side. And that land multiplied in wealth. And became, that's, some of that wealth is still in these major businesses in this country. And even when they had the last thing in the 1780s, the last land rush when Europeans poured into this country, the same kind of European ancestors you hear Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and O'Reilly talking about, they rushed into this country to get land. And in 24 hours, they picked up over 3 million acres of land in 24 hours crossing the Mississippi River. And yet, until you go out west, you see all...
a way that we can close this gap.
You got to understand.
Hang on a sec, Doc, because we got to take a quick break here. I'll let you explain that to our folks. We got to check the traffic and the weather in the DMV. Our guest is Dr. Claude Anderson. Reach out to us on AM 1450 and FM 95.9 WOL, where information is power. Stay with us, folks. Before we get back to Dr. Anderson, I just want to remind you, a couple of our other power talkers are going to join us tomorrow, actually. Dr. Leonard Jeffries is going to be here, and also Dick Gregory. So tell your friends to keep it locked on AM 1450 and FM 95.9 WOL. As I mentioned, we're speaking, we like to call him the man with a plan. Dr. Claude Anderson is the only one who's got a plan that's specifically for black folks. And he just told you about the wealth gap, how it expanded. But he's got a plan, too, that we to help us close that gap. And it's in his book, Powernomics. So, Doc, I'm going to let you explain that to the audience.
Right. And let me flip back for a few sentences here when I talk to you about the importance of land. And what I'm saying, when immigrants came to this country and they and all their ancestors acquired 1 billion, B, not M, they required 1 billion acres of land. Now, the important point about that, Carl, is not only do they have, that meant 99, almost 99% of all the land is locked into their hands, but all the resources on that land. In that land, they got all the gas, the oil, the minerals, the gold, the silver, the chrome, the bauxite, the magnesium. And now they got all these industries developing those things. Black folks started out with nothing. And everything is locked in box now. Now, all of a sudden, here you come in the 1960s, say, well, we're not going to practice slavery and Jim Crow semi-slavery anymore. Everything is even. It won't work. You cannot take steal everything from me on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, and all of a sudden say, well, I promise and I swear I'll never do it anymore. And let's all pretend that we're evil. We all just be friends now. You got to go back and redistribute some of the wealth and resources into black folks' hands. Now, what black folks should be focused on, how do you get some of those resources? How do black folks learn how to acquire wealth and power and resources so they can be a competitive group in the society? And that's what my book's Powernomics is about, Carl, learn how to play the game. Now, one of the first things they should be doing is following the law and then asking every individual in government and those in the civil rights organization do what they never wanted to do, what they're not conditioned to do, what they don't want to do, is to go back and start pressing for the fulfillment of the mandates in the 1866 Indian Treaty. Those Indian treaties specified what black folks should have gotten and never received from all the so-called civilized tribes. And see, you had a president sitting up there right now. He's been giving benefits to the so-called white Indians, what history book called $5 Indians, for the last 7 or 8 years. He's been giving them on an average about $3.5 billion every year. He's given over $30 billion to them. And those treaties, 1866 treaties, were put in place for black folk. It was put in place to force Indians to turn black folk and lose as slaves. Most people don't know that Indians, in proportional comparative terms, owned and controlled as many slaves as whites did. They were slave chasers, slave owners, and they got rewarded and compensated for chasing down blacks. That's why they call them civilized. But those who switched over and quit being they called savages and being civilized by owning slaves, the Cherokee, Choctaw, Seminole, Creek, all those and those Indians, they practiced slaveholding, and they all fought and signed agreements with the South to maintain slavery. And the only reason they got land now, got those reservations, was because when the government gave amnesty to the Southern white rebels after the Civil War and gave them amnesty and forgave them for attacking the United States and trying to overthrow the United States and being the first terrorists in America, and forgiven them for being the first terrorists. They also forgave the Indians and said, okay, you all took up arms against the United States. Every treaty says you Indians cannot take up arms against the United States. But since we've forgiven the South and all the rebels in the South and forgiven them for being terrorists, we'll forgive you too and give you back some of the land because you lost all your land. And from this day forward, the only basic treaty in this country will be the 1866 Indian Treaty. Now, the 1866 Indian Treaty stipulated that black freedmen, black Indians, and freed blacks should be treated in all manners similar to what so-called white Indians are treated. They should be getting all these benefits for the last 150 years and haven't gotten them. And you have not found any blacks sitting up in these governmental offices have picked up that treaty and say, why aren't blacks getting these benefits? Why are the billions of dollars that are owed them? Why don't they have some land? And in those treaties, it's stipulated that black folks have access to these reservation lands. They should have gone on those reservations and got some access to those resources. They should have been able to get some of the timber and gold and silver and chrome off those reservations. But here again, they sent a letter to the United States government back in about 1938 saying, what do we do to shut down black folk, make sure they never get anything? That letter bounced around to about 1941. Then the Secretary of the Department of Interior says, well, what you do to make sure black folk never get anything in this country is come up with a new rationale, a new basis to shut them out. And even though the treaty stipulated that black folk entitled certain benefits and some wealth, but what we do to make sure they don't get any wealth, why don't we come up with a new rule called a blood quantum law? And we get that Congress to approve that along with you, saying that basically that black folk are not entitled to anything on these treaties unless they can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that they got 1/4 Indian blood in them and make the Indian blood equal to Jesus Christ's blood, the great savior of the world. And so now Indian blood is elevated to status so that black folk are shut out. But first thing is have all these blacks in the country go back and start looking at the 1866 Indian Treaty and some of that welfare, Carl. The second thing is start practicing group economics. You start practicing. Black folk now have an annual disposable income about the ninth or tenth richest nation on earth. Of all those trillions of dollars that pass through their hands, 98% of it goes right through their fingers. They rush out and give it away and never bounce in their communities. Group economics says that money should bounce, Carl, 8 to 12 times before it leaves your hand. Hispanic money bounces 6 to 7 times. White money bounces 8 to 12 times. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times to 14 times. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black money doesn't bounce once because we don't practice group economics.
And why don't we? What's stopping us?
Let me give you a better example. Let me give you a cardinal example right now because white ice is colder than black ice. Carl, just yesterday, right here in Washington, D.C., I was invited down to a clothing store right there in Friendship Heights called Everett Hall Clothing. I went in there and I was amazed, Carl. Here's a black guy that's got one of the finest shops I've ever seen in my life of high fashion clothes, high quality, classic stuff that's well off. And good stuff. And it's right across the street on Wisconsin Avenue, right across the street from, guess what? Right across the street from Saks and Marcus, and near Marcus. And I said, how are you doing? He said, well, we can't get our clothes in those stores across the street. I said, and here all the blacks coming up there buying, going in, Eminem and Marcus and Saks buying the same clothes. This guy goes to Europe. He's been in business for 25 years. I mean, this place was so darn clean, you could almost eat off the floors in there. Everything is so nice and clean and well-lit. And the blacks in Washington, D.C., instead of going buying from this man, the Everett Hall's clothing store right there, he designs his own clothes. He goes to Europe and buys the same quality fabric that all these major stores, these name brand designers are buying it from the same companies. He goes over there to buy his equipment. Now, here's Neiman Marcus and Saks that gave one contract to one white company, gave them a $5 million contract, from what I hear, to put their clothes in their stores. But when he goes over there and asks them to put his clothes in the stores, they said, we won't. Finally, after he pressures them, they finally give him a contract for $80,000 to get a contract to the white guy for $5 million. And the white guys use the same clothes, the same fabric, they picked up from the same company over in Europe. And it goes to Nehemiah Marcus and the other stores again and say, well, why don't you all carry our clothes? And they say, we got space here for Asian designers and Asian clothes. We got space here for for clothes coming from India. We got clothes from the American designer, but we don't have any room for yours. What we put, we don't have any space in there for African American clothes designers. And so, and here, black folk going right into that store, depositing their money across the street in Neiman Marcus and Saks, rather than going into Everett Hall, right there in Wisconsin Avenue in Washington D.C. in Friendship Heights. That is totally disgusting. And they spend their money with anybody but their own people. This guy is good, and I like that. Black folks should be all those blacks should be going there buying. He got some black entertainers and athletes come out and buy some of his clothes. I think this guy got some fantastically beautiful clothes. And I told him as soon as I get back in about a week or two for my next trip, I'm going to get me some of these, buy me a sports coat and get me some of these beautiful turtleneck shirts. This is a good store, clean, beautiful place, good clothes, highly and beautifully designed. And he's up there now waiting for black folk who are going across the street to come to his store. That's why we don't have any money. And the last thing I have to say is that black folks should have be setting up land banks in all these darn churches, Carl. All these churches right now should be setting up land banks and holding land in the black hands. That's why every major city right now is getting ready to go be gentrified. All these urban areas, the 10 major urban areas are going to be gentrified. They're going to be gentrified where whites and other groups are going to come back and take over the land and going to bury black folk. And once they gentrify, they're going to privatize. They're going to take all the resources in those cities and put them in the hands of the wealthy class, just like they did the radio and the media in this country when they passed the Telecap Act in 1996 and wiped out most of the black radio stations in the country. And that's why we don't have no radio and TV right now, no print media, because now those have got the most money. And see, what our people have not understood is that in this country, again, as I said to you, it's what you own and control. Those who got the money, they rule everything. That's what this last election is about. It's about billionaires running for office. Black folk keep thinking that somehow that social integration, civil rights, and voting makes a difference. It doesn't. Those things have no impressionable impact on the quality of life of people just because you vote, just because you talk about civil rights and social integration. Those are negatives if you don't have an economy to back you up.
All right, 800-450-7876. Speak to the man with the plan. His name is Dr. Claude Anderson. The book is called Poweronomics. He's got some other books that you need to read as well if you haven't. Black Labor, White Wealth, that's the best-selling book. It tells us how we got into the situation that we're in as black people globally. Poweronomics is the one that tells us how to get out. And before Doc leaves, we'll give you a chance to find out how you can get those books. Everybody should have a copy of those books in their library and read it, not just having they taken up space on the shelf. Read it and do and practice what says in the book. We got a bunch of folks who want to speak to you already, Doc.
Yeah, well, let me submit this, Carl. First thing that I would ask him to do right now, Amazon just put out a rating, I guess, about 2 weeks ago showing that my books, the Poweronomics books, are rated number 3 out of the millions of books they sell in this country and around the world, that I was coming in about number 3 in terms of activity and sales. But what I'd like to see black folk do is go to the Poweronomics website. Go to the Poweronomics website, Poweronomics.com, and order the Power Packs and get all 4 of those books that are presently on a special. They get all 4 of those books for $70, and we ship them right out to them. And the new book will be on the market next month called The Black Reader, 101 Questions That You Never Thought to Ask About Black Folk Conditions and Black Folk Future in America, what you should be doing. And so, tell them to go to the Poweronomics.com and order them. And even do it rather before they even go to Amazon or they can go to the black bookstores. I just want to get that point in, Carl.
All right, and we'll do that again before you leave. 800-450-7876. Marlon's calling you. He's in Montrose, Virginia. Marlon, you're on with Dr. Claude Anderson.
Thank you for taking my call, Carl. Great show. And I give greetings to Baba Anderson. Without him, I don't know where we would be. So I have just two quick comments and one question. The first comment is I wanted to just describe how concentrated that Poweronomics series is. You can write 1,000 books off of those 4 books. I mean, and you can keep writing. And what we need to do is get down to the ground level and start detailing every step out, which, like you said, it's a huge undertaking. The second is for Dr. Claude Anderson. I want you to not be discouraged. We get what you're saying. People are talking. We get it. We're going to work. buying land. And this is really...
Hang on a second, Marlon. We're going to take this quick break. I'll let you finish up your question and your comment for Dr. Anderson. Folks, you too can join the discussion. Reach out to us on AM 1450 and FM 95.9. WOL, where information is power. Steve is staying with us, and our guest, as we call him, the man with the plan, Dr. Claude Anderson, is the only one who's written a plan that's specifically for black folks. All the other folks with plans, they've stolen parts of Dr. Anderson's plans and claim it to be their own, but folks, they all come from his book, Powernomics. But you've got to read the first book, Black Labor, White Wealth, because that tells us how we got into the situation that we're in. And we're not alone. You know, black people across this planet are in the same situation. That's why it's a best-selling book. And the other one, Powernomics, is a roadmap that tells us how to get out of the situation that we're in. Let's go back to Marlon in Montrose, Virginia. Marlon, your question or your comment for Dr. Anderson?
I'm finishing my second comment. So my second comment is I was just urging Dr. Claude Anderson not to be discouraged. We're out here and we're working. I purchased a rather sizable tract of land right here in the middle of Westmoreland County, the birthplace of George Washington. Stratford Hall is right here. 12,000 acres was a plantation here, and just took my kids there. So basically, I would like to be a part of that network. Is there some way, this is my question, is there some way you can link people in your network to help people like me out, who's out here? I'm basically by myself, trying to work acres of land, trying to put things together. Is there any way you could link me and other people like-minded to your network so we can, because we're going to already be like-minded, so we can grow this thing out?
Yes, sir. Let me cut in very quickly. Yes, sir. First of all, let me thank you. Thank you for your support and your pledge of support. It gives me a great deal of comfort to find out I got some black folk out there that do understand and are committed and they're conscious enough to try to help themselves and save themselves and save their own people rather than trying to save the world, trying to save midgets, humpback, lesbians, gays, everybody else but black folk. So I do appreciate that. And that's in God sent them here black, whether they like it or not. They've been assigned to a skin color race and a skin color team. Racism is a team sport, and I need you to be on that team. And right now we're getting ready. This year is going to be a year we're going to move in this country, because Donald Trump has already made that perfectly clear. This is a new year and a new administration. Donald Trump campaigned throughout his two-year session. He took most of the stuff, and almost 90% of what he was campaigning on was taken directly out of the newsletter that I sent to President Obama in the summer of 2012. And he took everything out of there and campaigned. That's everything from globalization to reciprocity for getting involved in war to immigration and all these issues that he talked about, and redeveloping these urban cities. All that came right out of that newsletter. And as a matter of fact, I sent out word to both the Republican and to Trump, and also to the Democrats and to Hillary Clinton, saying that I would be personally willing to come out of retirement to run and deliver millions of votes to them, whoever promises the most and delivers something to black folk, because nobody in this country has ever wanted to deliver anything to black folk. That's why we don't have anything. We can't get anything, and nobody promises anything, and nobody delivers anything to us. And so with your support, we're going to move. So, and what I want you to do is to be able to go to the Powernomics a website, or go to the Harvest Institute website, harvestinstitute.org, powernomics.com, and send us the information on you. We're mobilizing right now. We expect to have millions of black folk across this country in the year 2017. We're going to have a movement, and our movement is designed on two things, and I want you to get the word out. Tell all about people. Two things is the exceptionality of black folk. Black folk must cease and desist practicing trying to look for equality and equal opportunity and identifying with all these broad, ambiguous groups like minorities and poor folk and people of color. And they must identify with themselves first, their own people. So we're going to be forced, the whole emphasis will be placed on exceptionality. Black people are exceptional people. They're different people. They're unique people. They're entitled to be respected, appreciated, and compensated for having built this country. It was built on their backs. We're going to be pushing that all the way across the country. We're not going to identify with all these very broad, ambiguous groups. Those are fabricated classes. All these issues you hear people talking, I heard you talking about some earlier, those are classes. Those are not race issues. Those are class issues. And do not let class issues override race issues in this country. That's the first thing. So exceptionality is going to be our whole thing, pushing for the differences on how black folk were treated in this country, unlike any other treatment group. We are the only people that were denied all the basic resources, denied land, denied the fruits of our labor, denied the right to vote, denied to be in government, denied businesses, and denied an education, everything you can name. We are exceptional people. And second thing we're going to be doing, we're going to renegotiate our relationship with every major business, every political party, with the blacks in elected office, even our black entertainers and our black overclass. We're going to renegotiate our relationship with them. And across the board, we're going to be saying that anybody who would not support the black people in this country, the black, and help black folk become an economically competitive group to help rebuild some black businesses in this country where we can start providing jobs and business and employment opportunities and products and services and goods for our own people, we're going to boycott you just like you boycott us. And we plan on having millions of black folk moving across this country before the end of the year. We are already organizing across the country. We need you. We want you. You're part of our family.
Doc and Marlon, I thank you for your questions. Doc, is this open to white folks as well? Can they help?
No, I don't need them right now. I'd appreciate their sympathy and their understanding. But right now, in the past, what has happened? We had a liberal class that always wanted to neutralize everything down and pretend that all things are equal. Right now, things aren't equal. As I said, you cannot treat a midget and a giant as the same unless you give it. Equality won't help them. If I got $1 and another person, that giant got $100, treating us equally, giving him $1 and giving me $1, that doesn't help me. The relationship and the ratio remains the same. Black folks need special consideration, and what they've been trying to do for the last 100 years is take race out of the equation by saying, let's pretend that we're all colorblind and everything, and there's no more racism. It is. It still exists. And you cannot make black folk equal to all these other groups until you raise them up and redistribute some resources and opportunities into their hands specifically and solely. Don't try to equate an immigrant coming to this country, Hispanics and Arabs and Asians, to black folk. Those people have not been mistreated. They haven't been handicapped and shortchanged. So we're going to be pushing all these things strictly and solely for black folk, even though I desperately appreciate and need some whites to be standing by on the sidelines. So we reach the goal line, that we'll need them to come in at that point. But right now, the burden is on us as black folk to organize our own people based on our own dilemma. And learn how to rebuild our own black communities and service our own people and provide jobs and opportunities for them, and learn how to practice group economics and group politics with our own interests first and foremost. Nobody else's interest is going to go before black folks' interests from this point on.
All right. 800-450-7876. Ron is on line 3. He's calling us from the district. Ron, you're on with Dr. Anderson.
Good afternoon, Carl. Good afternoon, Dr. Anderson.
Good afternoon, sir.
Dr. Anderson, I'm, as I said here, looking in Powernomics on page 43, chapter 2. You cited the Powernomics vision for black America. And in there, you talked about examples of activity as relates to the black engineers and black scientists who came together to form a group to the efforts to try to get some of the high-tech jobs. But as you indicated, they fashioned their argument the wrong issue. You said rather than a minority issue, it's a black issue, which I agree wholeheartedly. Dr. Anderson, the solar and renewable energy field under Van Jones, who got the Green Jobs Act codified in 2007 in the Bush administration, Obama's administration has spent over $21 billion with a B, to grow the solar and renewable energy field. Dr. Anderson, I'd like for you to talk about the relationship of ego aggregation and vertical integration and how it could be applied to the solar and renewable energy field. I have an organization called the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, and we have on our website posted your 2012 letter in our Facebook page, as well as a letter dated July 8, 2016, where we asked President Obama through executive order to put $100 million in development of solar farms for historically black colleges and farmlands around this nation. And I just see it as this being a major piece that could be adopted by the Harvest Institute that could be a move forward, because this money is in the pipeline and is being spent every day. And because we are not organized and in position as a group and playing the game as a group, we have lost completely out. And I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
Well, first of all, you said so much. You were right on talking on everything you said. And I really need to have more time to get some thought to how we can further help you, other than the letters that you already have that have been posted about what I've been saying. But one of the biggest things, let's go back to your first question about ethno-aggregation. All ethno-aggregation means is coming together as a group based on your group, pooling your resources. That's what everybody else does. That's why Jews place Jews' interests first, or Indians place Indians' interests first. I want you to start placing your own people's interests first. And unfortunately, we got so many blacks in this country right now who've identified that the power and resources, privileges were based on white skin color. They will rush off to a second to identify with anybody but their own people. And there's no connection between putting a black person in office that you're talking about, putting them in office. I did a study back in 1960. I looked at at that time we only had 100 black elected officials in the United States. And I looked at the social discomfort indicators, food stamps, welfare, imprisonment, public housing, and lack of business and opportunities, lack of contracts and everything. I did the exact same study in 30 years later in 1990 to see what had happened, because by 1990, we had the number of black elected officials in the United States had gone up from 100 to over 9,000. And I said, that's a 9,000% increase. So obviously, black folks should have a 9,000% improvement in the quality of life and the business opportunities and the employment opportunities for our own people.
Right, hold that thought right there, Doc, because we got to take our last look at the traffic and weather in the DMV. I'll let you finish on the other side. We got folks all over the country want to speak to you. You too can join the conversation. 800-450-7876 on AM 1450 and FM 95.9. WOL, where information is power.
Washington, D.C. is 1450. 1450 WOL Radio.
Hey, thanks for staying with us, and our guest, the man with the plan, Dr. Claude Anderson. Again, the number to call to speak to him, 800-450-7876. And, Doc, I'm going to let you finish your answering that question that was posed by the last caller.
But thank you, because he raised an excellent point, and it needs to be addressed. But what I was leading to was that I did this major study on the number of elected black officials, I say, between 1960 and 1990, because we went from 100 black elected officials to over 9,000. Which should have signaled that we should have a major improvement or elevation in the quality of powerfulness and resources in the hands of black folk in this country, because of having elected that many blacks into elected offices. But what I found out, instead of having an appreciation or an increase in opportunities and resources, we had a decrease. That black folk didn't improve, they went backwards. And what I discovered from that study was that there's absolutely no connection between putting a black person in office and black folk getting benefits. Because the black people are the only people that run for an office and try to hide behind the mantra that, well, if I don't get elected to office, I'm going to take care of all the people. And see, they violate the whole rule of politics. Nobody elects you to office to represent all the people. We live in a nation of representative government, which means you're supposed to represent the people that put you in office. And when you get to that office, you swear an oath on the Bible saying, I hereby swear that I promise to serve and recognize and take care of the people who put me in office. Black folk, the only person to get elected to office, don't want to take care of their own people. And the same thing with our civil rights organizations. And they've now abandoned black folk. This abandonment really picked up starting about in the 1970s, where black elected officials and black civil rights leaders abandoned black folk and walked away from them, because white leadership, the liberal whites in this country, convinced them that what they need to do is to give in to the realities of racism and say there's nothing more can be done for black folk. You're wasting your time trying to help black folk. Now what you need to do is to move to what we call, let's fabricate some new groups. Let's fabricate minorities and poor folk and women and gays and midgets and short people, and let's take care of their interests and poor people rather than black folk. And so everybody abandoned black folk. And that's why, to answer the gentleman's question, that's why this year our goal is not only to push our exceptionality so we can address his issue further than what I've always tried to do for him, and secondly, to renegotiate our relationship with all these black civil rights organizations, with all these black elected officials, with all these blacks now who are singing and dancing and entertaining whites. They say, let me tell you something.
if you don't start spending some time and effort trying to help our own people and reconnect, as Dr. Anderson said, reconnect with black folk. If you're a politician, if you're an entertainer, an athlete, if you don't reconnect to our people, we're going to boycott everything you do. If we can't boycott you, we start boycotting your sponsors. We will not buy your records. We're not going to see your movies. We will not do anything. The same thing if they're advertising Rush Limbaugh, if they do something bad about black, we're going to boycott. And we're going to build our own communities and step and say, we're not taking any more free butt whippings in this country. That's what we're going to do. And that point, once we started reorganizing, practicing ethno-aggregation, putting our own interests first, started practicing group economics and group politics, we can then start to hold these people accountable, and we can address the question that the gentleman just raised.
All right, 800-450-7876. Go to Northern Virginia. Hamid's waiting for us. He's online. Hamid, you're on with Dr. Anderson.
Hello, Dr. Anderson.
Yes, sir.
All right. And look, I applaud you and I appreciate your work so, so much, because the way that you approach these issues, you nullify these very common, ignorant arguments and these sound bites that people like to say. And so something I wanted to say, and I'm going to get off the phone. I just wanted to say that, what's my point? I wanted to hear about that clothing store because I want to support them. And I also wanted to say,
If you do that, I would love you for that. I wish these blacks would just crowd and go over there. It's called Everett Hall, and it's in Friendship Heights, right here at the borderline between Bethesda and Washington D.C. on Wisconsin Boulevard. A beautiful, magnificent. You all would be just proud of this. I've never seen blacks have such a wonderful shop with such high quality, good clothing.
Repeat one more time the name. Repeat the name.
It's called Everett Hall. Everett Everett Hall, H-A-L-L.
Got it. And one more thing. You know, at the pace that we're going, like you've been saying, I had a feeling that at some point the white people are going to basically gentrify all of Africa, and then they're going to build up these fancy resorts, and we'll spend thousands of dollars to go pay them to go back to our homeland to stay in these resorts.
Well, that's coming, too. As a matter of fact, I get speaking engagements all over Africa. As a matter of fact, just looking at the South African constitution, they just drafted a constitution. Would you believe what they did? They drafted a constitution that says, basically, in the constitution, that blacks in South Africa can't get preferential treatment for anything, that they can't come first. And that who comes first, they built into it, enacted an affirmative action plan for Chinese coming from China to South Africa and getting preferential treatment, but they won't get a preferential treatment to their own people. That's how backward some of our people are. You got about, out of 29, about 500,000 blacks in South Africa and about 2.5 million whites. Whites own 99% of all the resources, wealth, and power in Africa, just like they do in America. And as a matter of fact, in South Africa, you got one family, the De Beers family, that own the jewel, the gold, the silver, the chrome. One, they own 50% of all the wealth. And that means that 29.5 million black folk own absolutely nothing in Africa, just like in America. And these black folk keep talking about civil rights and social integration. No, you better social integrate and get some money and wealth and power and start taking care of your own people. And so and they're taking over Africa. They're exhausting all the resources out of Africa. And if I were to take a pair of scissors and cut the umbilical cords from Europe, Europe would perish because they're sucking everything out of Africa. And blacks over there, and you got they have a lot of puppet governments who are fronting for those countries to make sure that the blacks in Africa get absolutely nothing. And that's the problem in Nigeria and the places I would go for trade missions and everything else. I mean, you need to know that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, thanks for the call.
800-450-7876. Go to Kansas City. Robert's waiting for us online, too. Robert, you're on with Dr. Anderson.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Anderson?
Hi, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, man. Let me ask, I got a comment and a question. The comment is, I was speaking to a man from Pakistan who owns two gas station convenience stores here in the Kansas City area. This was the day right after the midterm elections. And so I asked him, I said, well, what did you think about the midterm elections? And he said, I don't get involved in stuff like that. And when he said that, Dr. Anderson, the first thing I thought to myself was that when these people come here from India, Pakistan, and the Middle East, they don't come here to get involved in our political process. They come here to pull their money together to start businesses for themselves and to buy businesses for themselves. So why we as African-Americans thinking that voting is going to put food on the table and pay the bills, the people who come here from the Middle East, Pakistan, and India, they're buying every gas station, convenience store, every fast food chain they can get their hands on. And the Asians are doing the exact same. The Asians, they don't come here to participate in our, if you talk to the Asians who own a lot of these Chinese restaurants, they don't come here to participate in our political process. And when I looked on the internet, it showed that I typed in ethnic groups that have the highest median income per race. It showed that the Asians have the highest median income out of all the other ethnic groups in America. Their median income is $72,000 a year. Whites are $67,000, blacks are $36,000, and the Hispanics are $33,000. So here's the question. We've been in this country for over 400 years, and according to Bob Law, who comes on Carl's show all the time, he says $1 trillion passes through our hands every year. So how is it that we've been here 400 years and we have $1 trillion to pass through our hands, but yet we don't own any gas stations, we don't own anything? We should be owning everything in our neighborhood.
Well, your answer is very simple. That's what Powernomics is about, because you're not practicing ethno-aggregation. You never have. You got leadership for the last 150 years been telling you just the opposite. They've been telling you that your future and the gold mine and the rainbow is in social integration. That's what you've been chasing. You've been chasing a social illusion, and it's led you into a blind alley and left you there and abandoned you there. Everybody else is practicing. They're practicing ethno-aggregation. That's why every group that comes to this country, like you met the Asian and Arab, the first thing they do when they get here, they find people that look like them, walk like them, talk like them, and they build a community. They got community. If they're coming from Asia, they got Chinatowns, Japantown, Little Korea, Little Saigons. And you go across America and find Mexican towns, Cuba, Little Italy, French town, German town, Pole town, Hockey town, Cork towns, Greek towns, everything but a black town. When I go to Detroit, Michigan, there was a 92% black city, and I write a plan for them, and I was going to build a black business district for them. And the whites and all the immigrants came out from the suburbs that said that would be racist for you to do something just for black folk and not include us. And I said, yeah, we admit that in the city of Detroit, you had a 92% black city. The 92% of the population is black, but in that city, Arabs control 90% of the businesses. And you got a Chinatown in Detroit, you got a Chinatown, Asian town, you got a Hockey town, a Cork town, a Pole town, and a Greek town. They said, but they'd be racist, so you have a black community. And the black leadership, by and large, except a few on the city council, came out, a few blacks on the city council supported the program to build a black business district. But the rest of them say, you're sure is right, like the Booker T. Washington Foundation. It'll be racist for us to do something strictly for black folk. We don't need anything, or we need to be with everybody else. And I said, if you do that, you're gonna go bankrupt. And that's exactly what happened. I said, if you practice group economics, you got about $11 billion disposable income floating around this city in the government sector and in the private sector. I said, if you practice group economics in the city of Detroit and make your money bounce 10 times minimally, you have $110 billion. Every black in this city would be living extremely well. But they didn't want to do that. And what happened then is that the Arabs came in Detroit, and out of 146 gas stations, Arabs now own 144. And the Arabs own all the gas stations, the grocery stores, party stores, liquor stores, discount stores. The Chinese and the Koreans own all. They own the hair shops, nail shops, wig shops, and nail shops. The East Indians are coming in, buying up all the Dunkin' Donuts and the cleaners. And the cheap hotels. Everybody owns something except black folk. Because
right,
we got
hold
black
that thought
leadership.
Right there, Doc. Wow, that's just hard to hear all of that. But hold it, and that's Detroit is indicative of all the other major urban areas as well across the country. But we got to take this quick break. I'll let you finish on the other side. 800-450-7876. Speak to the man with the plan, Dr. Claude Anderson, right here on AM 1450 and FM 95.9. WOL, where information is power.
1450 WOL Radio.
Thanks for rolling with us, my guest, Dr. Claude Anderson, the man with the plan. As I told you earlier, folks, he's the only one that's got a plan that's specifically for black folks, and it's written in his book, Powernomics, and his book, Black Labor, White Wealth, is another book that tells us how we got in the situation that we're in. So, you know, it wasn't by accident. It was by design. I'll tell you that much. But you got to read these books to understand what's going on. And before Dr. Anderson leaves us, he's going to tell us how you can get those books, because he mentioned the best-selling books for Amazon. But let's empower some of our people. Let's do what Dr. Anderson is preaching. So, Doc, I'm going to let you finish up the Detroit story before I take another call for you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Carl. And what I was saying to the gentleman is that in Detroit, the Arabs are dominating, and the government and what he wanted to do was, his intent was to bring in, get a fast track green card system for Chinese and Asians coming out of the Far East to come to Detroit, Michigan, and make Detroit the biggest Chinatown outside of China. And to be duplicating and paralleling the fact that Dearborn, Michigan, right there in Detroit, is already the largest concentration of Arabs outside of the Middle East. And that way, in here, more black folk, who made up 92% of the population, would be buried. And so the Arabs and Chinese right now are buying up most of the major buildings and land inside of Detroit, Michigan, and blacks in Detroit own and control nothing. And what they've done, after they're gentrifying in Detroit now to make it either Chinatown or a continuation of the Arab town, And all the resources, public resources that were and belong to the black public there, are being privatized. Things like Cobo Hall, Joe Louis Arena, the riverfront, the city hall, Cobo Hall, the zoo, the golf course, the city airport. Everything in that city has been privatized into the hands of the dominant white society. And so black folk own nothing in Detroit. And they're getting buried alive. That gentrification is going to take place all over the United States. The things they use to gentrify and move the wealth from black hands to white hands, to answer Carl's original question about the why blacks don't have the wealth, the two things they use, one is called gentrification, and they follow gentrification with privatization. They take any resources, like in Detroit, to where the bridge to Canada is now owned by a white, is owned by a black white man, and they're going to now also sell the tunnel from Detroit over to Canada to whites, so they can make money off of all the cars going underneath the river. Black folk will own and control nothing in this country through privatization and gentrification. Then also they got a thing called metropolitan form of government and the regional government, where cities that bound close to black areas, that they have to set up a team where they be able to be team run rather than being run by the blacks in charge. And the last thing they bring is called cool cities, so the gays can come in and set up a gay community, a large gay community with businesses in every black city in the United States. And right now, that 70% of all the black folk in America live in and around 10 large metropolitan areas. So all those cities will be taken over and dominated by immigrants and eventually gays and young white people moving back to the cities.
That's some real talk. 800-450-7876. Let's go to Detroit. Line 2. Olaf's calling us from the Motown. Olaf, you're on with Dr. Anderson.
Hey, Carl and Dr. Anderson. Hey, let me tell you something, Carl, everybody, real quick. I'm 43 years old. I've been born and raised in Detroit all my life. Let me tell you something. Everything this man is telling you is absolutely right. Let me tell you real quick. They got a new hockey stadium downtown being built. It's supposed to be 51% African minority construction workers working on that billion-dollar stadium. Let me tell you something. You drive by there, you don't see now one black face on there. Not one black face. It's all white and all Latino construction workers. The city council, you had to have 51% black minorities working down there. But this is how they got slick. When they said minorities, they also meant Latinos and Mexicans. It was supposed to be 51% blacks. But you go down there, you don't see no blacks working on this call. We call the Hockey Town District. They're building all new apartments and condos around the whole center, you know, around the whole stadium. If you black, you go in there and you try to apply for one of those new apartments, they look and laugh at you. He's absolutely right. I stay in Brightmoor. That client is, you know about the Brightmoor neighborhood in Detroit, right? I stay here in Brightmoor. They are tearing down all these old houses and building condos, new houses, ranch houses, and everything. Blacks cannot get them. These white folks are moving back down here, and it's not just downtown and Midtown, in these neighborhoods, and they would not let these black people down here get these new homes. I'm telling you, it is everything. You said, we don't own nothing down here. We don't even own a penny candy store, Mr. Anderson.
All right, thanks.
This man is telling you, these Arabs and these Chaldeans, man, you go in these gas stations and these liquor stores, and you go in there, you act a fool because the price is so high or something, they'll pull a gun out on you. You go to the police come down, they won't do nothing to them. I'm telling you, it's absolutely insane. Dr. Anderson, tell them the truth, man.
All right, thanks, Oleg. Doc, you want to respond to anything he said?
Right, and he's right on time. Tell him I definitely appreciate his support in my statements. And with them downstairs changing everything to a minority from black. See, that is illegal. See, black folk in Detroit should get off their dead butts and get out and raise Cain about it. See, the Supreme Court ruling in Hobbs and Richmond, the Hobbs and Richmond Supreme Court ruling says that it's a racist court decision, but it says that it is illegal in this country and unconstitutional for you to bypass a majority to give to a minority. And what they want to do, they want to make sure that whenever whites were the majority, they got everything and blacks couldn't get anything. All blacks got to do is flip the switch and flip the game in the reverse and say in Detroit, well, you got a 92% black city. And in that city, do not let, and black, since blacks are the majority population, do not let them put you in a minority category. That's illegal and illegal, and it's unconstitutional based on the Supreme Court decisions. And say, look, you cannot, it's illegal for you in Detroit to be bringing in minorities and these, with these minority classes of Hispanics, Arabs, and Asians and bypassing black folk and giving the benefits to whites, Asians, Arabs, or Hispanics. That is illegal and unconstitutional based on the Hobbs and Richmond decision from the United States Supreme Court. Don't not let anybody ever put you, I don't care what these civil rights leaders and these elected officials tell you, never let anybody hide and make you, render your exceptionality invisible. You are very special people. Do not let them put you in some broad, ambiguous category called minority, poor folk, people of color, and middle class or poor people. When they use those kind of broad categories, they are burying you and they eradicating and eliminating your advantages as a race of people. You said, no, you identify me as a black person. Don't even put me in the category of an African-American. I don't even know what an African-American is. We are black folk. We are not African-American. Anybody comes to this country is an African-American. Since all human beings originated out of Africa, anybody in America is an African-American. You make them be very specific. And use the law, you reverse the law and flip the laws on these people and use them to your advantage.
All right, well, if you got your marching orders from Dr. Anderson, 800-450-7876. Let's go to Dayton, Ohio. Anthony's calling us. He's on line 5. Anthony, you're on with Dr. Anderson.
Mr. Milton, I'm honored again to be on your show. And Dr. Anderson, I appreciate you so much for everything you're saying. I feel so alone sometimes, Anthony. But pardon my ignorance, but I have a couple of questions. One, what is the end game? Should we not be compensated in the form of like maybe a couple of states like Alabama and Georgia as black people? And then two, is there a way to press someone into service like former President Obama, who would know the ins and outs of government and be able to litigate reparations? Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Anthony. Doc?
Yeah, to tell him, first of all, I would depend on Obama doing one single solitary thing ever for black folk. That's not in his DNA. He's never going to do anything, so he can forget about that and bury that idea. And as far as the land access, that's one of the things that black folks should be marching for. So you always got these black folk always calling for marches. Let's march for this and march for that without any goal and any thing that they're not trying to achieve a darn thing. They just want to march and march just for the exercise of wearing out shoes and spending money on buses and planes and trains and the restaurants and hotels back in the white folks' pockets. What you should do is set up goals and say that, now, we need land. This country has maldistributed 1 billion acres of land into the hands of dominant white society. You should say, what we want now, we want some of this public land that's in this, that is now entitled to states and cities and federal government. Some of that land in these different areas should be set up a special program where blacks can go get land presently from some of these states and federal governments and state governments. That's public land. They should cut loose some of that black folk to be able to start competing in all respects for whites for resources. And there's one other point I forgot he made, the last point he made, Carl, I forgot what it was.
We'll just keep moving because there's a bunch of folks who want to speak.
Okay.
So, I know we're coming up on a break. David's on line 3. David's calling you from Pennsylvania. David, you're on with Dr. Anderson.
It's good to talk to you. I got two questions for you, but I just want to give a backdrop. My grandmother that lived through the Depression, she used to tell us that the black rich always separated themselves, but the community, the black community as a whole, just like you talk about the immigrants, we used to stick together back then. And in the South, and also when we moved the migration to the city. And they also was told that one of the things that destroyed our business when they had that burn, baby burn, and we started burning down our own neighborhoods. These are the two questions I got for you. Now, what effect do you think drugs and that crack epidemic, because I lived through that and I was in New York City with that, what effect do you think that had on destroying our community with the businesses? Because I seen a shift when the grandparents used to, or the neighborhood used to grab you by your hood, say what you're doing, give you a spanking or something like that, get involved with you. Whereas once the crack was involved, they were scared to deal with the my generation, I guess, because of the shooting, the retaliation and stuff like that. And the second question is, we give praise to these communities, and I've seen them, the Pakistans, Indians, Chinese, but...
Hang on a second, David, but we got to take a quick break here, our last break, and I'll let you finish your second question for Dr. Anderson on AM 1450 and FM 95.9, WOL, where information is power. Staying with us, our guest, the man with the plan, Dr. Claude Anderson. I want to remind you folks, kind of tomorrow, actually, two more of our power talkers are going to be here, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Dr. J, Professor Jeffries, and also be joined by Dick Gregory. So tell your friends to keep it locked on AM 1450 and FM 95.9. Before I go back to David in Pennsylvania, I mentioned Dr. Anderson's books, Black Labor, White Wealth, because we're racing the clock as we go out now. I want Dr. Anderson to tell us how you can pick up those books, those of you don't have a copy of those books. And if you do, you should consider supporting the Harvest Institute. And if Doc can tell us about the Harvest Institute, I'd appreciate it. Doc?
Yeah, well, see, the Harvest Institute is set up strictly and solely to try to help black folk become economically and politically empowered. We try to pick problems ahead of time and see what's coming down the chute and try to analyze, critically analyze it, then come up with the solutions and try to circulate those solutions to black folk so they'd be in a position to be able to prophylactically to be able to take care of those issues in themselves. And that's the whole purpose of the Harvest Institute, which is a black think tank and the only kind of its nature in the country. In terms of getting our books, I would like black folk to be able to go to the powernomics.com website and all the power packs. We have the power packs right now, four major books. These are the best-selling books, as Amazon say, in this country and around the world. These books have been bestsellers now, where typically a book is a bestseller for 90 days or before it goes into the bargain basket or 120 days and go into the discount shelves. Our books have been bestsellers now for over 20 years and selling and outselling the books around the world. And for black books. So go to thepowernumbers.com and order the power pack. $70 and get all four of those books and we'll send them out to you. And even though you can get them from Amazon, we prefer if you go straight to the Powernumbers. And also maybe when you get a chance, make donations and contributions to theharvestinstitute.org through the PayPal, because we spend that money trying to pay lawyers to support our lawsuit to force the government to carry out the mandates of the 1866 Indian treaties, which your present president refused to do.
All right. David, you want your question first, the drug issue, and what's the second question?
The second question, and also about the drug issue, I think it cut off the elders from our youth, meaning the elders have wisdom, and the young, my generation, went out on their own thinking they know everything. Second question about the other communities coming in is that most of the time, my experience, especially in New York City, there's a mafia element behind them or some type of money thing that backs them up. They're not just on their own, you know, whether it be Chinese or something like that. The two questions I got. Thanks. And I'll buy the books. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me ask that very quickly for you. First of all, see, what happened to our community? See, integration is like a weapon. That's a tool. Integration is a tool beyond being a philosophy and an illusion for black folk. And when black folks started talking about social integration in the 1950s, whites wanted to get away from black folk using the 1950s Highway Act to build expressways through every major cities. And they took and built highways through every black business district to destroy them. And they used those highways to relocate all the wealth and power and businesses out of the black cities into and built what they call suburbs and moved everything into the suburbs. What destroyed all these major cities was not black folk. What destroyed them was the white moves all the resources out of the city to the suburbs. And that ran them down. And now they're going to come, and black folk then lost the value of their homes. And now when whites going to come back into the cities, pretty soon, and black folk been following whites out to the suburbs, and by paying
high prices for those suburban homes. Now, white's going to double back and come back downtown to the urban cities and gentrify and get by cheap land inside the urban cities and black for nothing and leave black folk in the suburbs. The new ghettos in this country are going to be the suburbs because white's going to come back in the inner cities and take them over. Now, in terms of the drugs, the drugs came from that crack cocaine started coming up because of bringing in the Cubans into Florida. And that started in about 1990s. I was running the campaign for the attorney general there when crack cocaine was coming in from the Latin American countries and being brought into the Miami airport on special planes and being parked on the north side of the airport and unloaded. And some of the people right now, high-level people that you know in government right now was behind that crack cocaine epidemic in this country. What they're trying to do is get around the Boland Amendment and be able to find cheap ways to fund the Contra War down in Latin America. And they introduced it to black folk, crack cocaine. But now even crack cocaine is dying out of existence because they're moving away from crack cocaine now and going to methane. They're creating all kind of chemical drugs and boutique drugs that are even more powerful than crack cocaine, and they're destroying these people's minds. And the people that they want to be as consumers, they used to be on blacks for crack, but now these boutique drugs are going to wipe out a lot of these young white kids instead. So drugs have always been used as also a tool, a weapon, just like social integration was a weapon.
All right, 800-450-7876. Professor Jim Klingman's joining us, your friend on line two. Professor Klingman?
Hi, Carl. Hi, Claude.
That's my buddy, Jim Klingman.
Yeah. Claude used to call me, and he probably still does, call a brick thrower. So let me throw a brick right now at our people. When Claude wrote Black Labor, White Wealth, I wrote my book, Economic Enslavement, and I wrote a whole chapter on his book. And then when he wrote Powernomics, I was writing Blackonomics around the same time. I said in Blackonomics, in the intro, that Blackonomics tells us what to do. Powernomics tells us how to do it. Claude's book has been written since 2001. And people keep calling in talking about what they're going to do. And, oh, I love Dr. Claude, and I got your book. The question is, are you following it? In Detroit, there were people there with Claude who were serious about doing what a lot of people call in and say we need to do.
Jim, you were one of the people that came to Detroit.
I'm not blowing my own horn. I'm talking about Dr. Rosie. I'm Afika Giuka, Doc Chisholm, Tom Pope, Bob Law, and others were there to do the work, not to get there and talk and let's have a march on Detroit. So I'm telling black people that we need to stop whining and start grinding and do the work that has been laid out by Claude for 17 years and myself as well. But when are we going to stop giving platitudes and start doing some work? Because if we don't do it, Claude, and I said this yesterday, and you know it, you know better than most, that we're still going to be, you'll be 100 on Claude's show talking about, well, here's the plan, black folks, and nothing is happening. So I suggest that black folks get the folks who are doing the work that has been laid out, and let's make some progress for our people.
Well, thank you, Jim. Jim is absolutely right. Right on time, as usual. That's one of the brightest black minds we got in the country. You just heard it. Good, strong black man, always have been, always been right on time, and always he could pinpoint the issues. And I've always appreciated his friendship, and God bless him and wish him well always.
All right, thanks, Jim. 800-450-7876. Go to Georgia, Atlanta, line 6, Tabacuti. You're on with Dr. Claude Anderson. And Tabacuti's gone. Let's go to Sandra then in D.C. on line 3. Sandra?
Hi, Carl and Dr. Anderson. You know, Dr. Anderson, white people, you ask them, will they do business with black folks? They say, sure, I wouldn't discriminate, but obviously they do the opposite. I mean, should we take a page out of their book? You know, we say the same thing. Oh, you know, we would do business with any race. It doesn't matter. But actually just, you know, do business with black folks.
Ask the question again. I missed it. I'm sorry.
Okay. You know how white people say they will do business with any race. They wouldn't discriminate. But actually, they only shop with one another. Should we take a page from this book and say that, you know, we'll shop with any race also, but actually we only shop with black folks?
But any way you want to do it, as long as the results come to the right line. And see, that's the white city that they're open with. But if you ever see a white person get in his car on a Saturday morning, drive down to a black neighborhood, go into a black store, buy something about a black person produced, take a picture of it. That can be very valuable one day, because they don't go to black and buy anything that's black. They're going to boycott you. They've been boycotting you for years. White people right now live off of two incomes. They live off of 100% of their money and 98% of the money they take out of the black community. That's why they live so well. That's why I'd go back to Carl's original question about how they get the wealth.
Right.
They get the wealth because they hold their money and they revolve it around in their community 8 to 10 times. They also get 98% of the black money. Blacks only spend about 2% of their money in their own community. So whites live off of two incomes of 198% and blacks live off of 2 cents. You cannot be a competitive people living off of 2% and only 0.5% of the wealth of the nation. We haven't got a snowball's chance in hell unless these blacks get serious, as Jim Clingman just said, and start doing something. And stop listening to some of these civil rights leaders and these black elected officials who don't, and all these black entertainers that don't know their butts from the hole in the ground about how this black folks should be surviving.
All right. Thanks, Andre. 800-450-7876. Line one is Virginia. Also calling us from the district. Virginia, you're on with Dr. Anderson.
Hi, Carl and Dr. Anderson. I came in on the tail end of him talking about Everett Hall. In August, I was over on Wisconsin Avenue, and I stopped in to congratulate him on his long standing on that corner with his store. And this December, I went back to the store, and I purchased 2 gifts for my son. And I told him, I'm back here to put my money where my mouth is. And if more people would do that, you can't imagine how pleased he was to hear that I actually just stopped to congratulate him on being there on that corner for so long, because I remember when he and his brother, I believe, first opened that shop. He has fine items in there, and they may be a little pricey for a lot of us, but, you know, we got to sacrifice, and I appreciate the show. Thank you.
Thanks, Virginia. 800-450-7876. If we get George in real quick. George from Clinton, Maryland. George, you're on Dr. Anderson.
How you doing, Carl? How you doing, Mr. Anderson?
I'm fine, sir. How are you doing today?
Great, great. Enjoy your show. Okay, what I do is I run a social media page, and what I do is I have, like, black business owners come on, post their products and their services and their goods and everything, but we have a hard time of getting these colored folks, you know, involved. I don't allow anybody else other than black people to post on this page. It's frustrating sometimes, but I just, you know, feel like, you know, keep going, try to get people to buy these products. You know, like, I'm all about, you know, trying to build these services within our community. I think we need to close all these liquor stores down. I'm in Prince George's County, and you could throw a rock in any direction and hit the top of a doggone.
Right. George, you're running out of time. Do you have a question? Can you put in a question form for him to respond?
Yeah. I mean, just trying to find out the most effective way to, you know, just get these black businesses noticed on Facebook or you know, whatever, you know, just without them having to spend a lot of money on advertising.
Well, I have to plead ignorance, and I don't know very much about how to use high tech in terms of again, anybody over 50 or 60, they have a lot of difficulty in trying to figure out what Facebook streaming and all that stuff is. I don't really understand it that well, so I'm not in a position to be able to respond to that. I don't know enough about.
We got about a minute, so I want you to tell folks again how they can get the book and the Harvest Institute, how can they reach the Harvest Institute, and how can they reach the Powernomics Corporation.
Right. Well, they can reach the Harvest Institute by going to the Harvest Institute website, harvestinstitute.org, and they can make a donation there, or they can call the Harvest line. That's 301-564-6075. And they can do the same thing with the Power Numbers through that same number, Power Numbers Corporation, and order the Power Pack.
Give us the number again.
The number is 301-564-6075. Again, 301-564-6075, and get the Power Pack.
and get all four books for $70 on a special. And the new book will be in the bookstore next month called The Black Reader. All this information is critical information for black folk if you plan on surviving, competing in this society. And and you can always go to Amazon, but if you come directly to us, you bypass the middle class people.
All right, Doc, we got to run. We're out of time. Thank you, folks. We got to get out of here. Stay strong. Stay positive. Stay in the light. See you tomorrow on AM 1450 and FM 95.9. WOL, where information is power.